how much does urban architecture affect happiness? The frosted windows of a bank, the cluster of tiny restaurants on the corner, a city block-long factory behind a blank wall in an inner-city neighborhood. What does that have to do with public health? Well, environmental psychologist Colin Ellard says a lot. Certain types of urban design can affect how quickly you walk, how you feel. It can even contribute to addiction. Dr. Ellard, Colin joins us now. Welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
You write in Eon, the magazine, about conducting a study of people in New York on a block where a Whole Foods went up and had a whole block of this frosted windowed wall. What happened?
What we did was to set up a walking experiment where people were asked to carry smartphones that asked them different kinds of questions, and also to wear some simple gear that recorded their levels of physiological arousal. So think of something like the fight or flight kind of response, but lower key than that. Mm-hmm. And we compared what happened to people as they walked in front of this large, long Whole Foods store in the Lower East Side of New York with what happened when they walked along facades that were of a similar size but of a really different kind of design. So think of an open design with lots of windows and doors, lots of activity, things to see, stuff going on the street. And what we discovered was that there was enormous difference between the ways that people felt in those two different environments. So in front of the Whole Foods facade, they were pretty unhappy. They were actually pretty bored. And we saw that reflected as well in the recordings that we made with the bracelets that we used to measure arousal levels.
And by the way, we just want to reinforce, this was a Whole Foods, and I'm betting that Whole Foods would like to think that even if it takes up a whole city block with sort of just a plain facade, just the fact that it's a Whole Foods might make people's hearts skip a beat because it's supposed to trigger all sorts of things in you about, oh, good food and high end. But no.
I feel as though I'm constantly beating up on them. And you know, Whole Foods is by far not the only kind of building that is guilty of these kinds of sins when it comes to facade designs.
And by the way, what kinds of sins? A plainness? What is the sin?
Well, we talk about it in terms of a visual complexity. If you think about walking along in front of a store like this that has windows, yes, but they're frosted windows, so you can't actually see anything that's going on inside, and nothing else. There's no visual complexity at all. That's something that's actually aversive to human beings and our nervous systems. It produces stress, it produces boredom, and there is some evidence to suggest that those kinds of physiological states can actually lead to increases in the secretion of stress hormones like cortisol that we know are linked to important health variables. Having too much cortisol in your body increases your risk of developing things like cardiac disease.
Look at this. We've gone from having a boring walk along a block to heart disease, and you also say addiction because boredom can lead to risky behaviors. And you're not the first to study this. In 2006, there was a Danish urbanist who saw that people walk more quickly, trying to get past blank facades, as opposed to the second spot that you took people. This was a cluster of restaurants. People can picture them and maybe in Manhattan, you know, sort of a place with a lot of doors and tables. And does that also translate into secreting certain things that actually make you healthier?
Yeah, absolutely. It would just as the boring facades would have caused an increase in the secretion of cortisol, the lively engagement with an open facade would have had the opposite effect. So it would have had a health-giving effect.
So what are city planners to take from this? Because there are cities, and you mentioned them, Stockholm, Melbourne, Amsterdam, that have codes that keep this thinking in mind.
Yeah, I think that those codes are a great idea and incredibly important for planners in any city to think about. In other cities like the ones that you mentioned, Melbourne, for example, you cannot have long, unbroken building facades beyond a certain length. So there's a stipulation. And I think that's incredibly important to do. You know, I think one of the issues that planners everywhere have to deal with is that the decisions that get made have to be made on the basis of the data that's available. And I think far too often the kinds of data that we collect that might have to do with, for example, things like transportation networks and cars, those kinds of variables don't necessarily have anything to do with human health and well-being.
Yeah. Well, we mentioned the Danish study in 2006. They found that a walker moving, you know, at a walking rate should see an interesting new thing about once every 5 seconds. And I'm thinking that all that Whole Foods had to do, you mentioned it had a frosted window, just change it to a clear window.
Yeah, that kind of decision would not be a hard one to make. I think that in that particular instance, one of the reasons for the frosted windows was the design of the interior of the store, in which the cashiers were actually lined up facing away from that window. So understandably, you wouldn't necessarily want passersby on the street to be able to see what's happening on the cash registers. It's a matter of security. But at the same time, it wouldn't have been a very hard design decision to put that part of the store elsewhere. It wouldn't even take very much on the outside of the store to break up that monotony. So you could think of variations in the sidewalk, plantings, benches, seating on the street. As long as there's something to look at, all of those things will break up the monotony of a long, boring, blank facade.
Or pile all the fruit and vegetables along the window, the way the bodegas in New York do. Because the other thing, I mean, you're talking about health and the impact on people, but it's a better idea for cities to have happy pedestrians who want to come there and walk through them and maybe spend their money.
Absolutely. I mean, that's so important at so many levels. I mean, it would be a great idea for the Whole Foods store, but of course, in terms of walkability in general, we're all talking now about how we need to make cities more walkable. Well, one of the most important parts of that is to increase people's desire to walk, and the way to do that is to give them things to look at. We're not going to want to walk somewhere where there's actually nothing to see.
Well, it's one thing to say make your city more interesting for all the reasons we've listed. But I'm thinking, too, this also might be important for looking at how blighted neighborhoods, people who live there, might be less healthy. And as you say, it might even lead to risky behavior because they don't have that stimulation.
Yeah, I think there's likely some truth in that. I mean, all of the problems that contribute to that kind of situation, it's, of course, incredibly complicated. And it goes well beyond the visual appearances of things. But in terms of risky behavior, I mean, one of the things that we know for sure, and this is not necessarily just in the context of one's environment, but in the context of one's entire life, that people who have substance addictions, for instance, and who are recovering, one of the most likely causes of relapse is boredom. And so in an environment where one might predict that an individual would be more likely to be bored, where there's nothing to see, there's nothing of interest on the streets, it's just one more contributing factor to the likelihood of relapse for someone who's suffering in that kind of situation.
Well, you bring neuroplasticity into this debate, and that's a word we've become familiar with. It's the idea that the brain can rewire itself with certain stimulation, and I'm presuming you mean the opposite can be true as well, if that stimulation isn't there.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. There's been a long history of research interest in neuroplasticity in both the brains of animals and in the brains of human beings. And one of the really revolutionary aspects of this discovery that's more recent is that it used to be thought that all of those plastic effects on brains were confined to the early stages of development. And now we know that that's not true, yeah. That our brains are incredibly plastic and responsive to their environment all through our lives.
Colin Ellard, environmental psychologist and neuroscientist at the University of Waterloo. His book is Places of the Heart. Colin, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. My pleasure.